Gabby, can we have the list of those present and any apologies?
Sure. From the CCNSO, we have Becky Burr, Keith Davidson, Chris Disbain, Daniel Calhef, Patricia Pobleta, Catherine Reynolds, Nigel Roberts, Bill Semick, Dodis Sparks DeBlanc. From the GAC, we have Mark Carvel, Suzanne Riddell, and Ruth Puente. We have Cheryl Langdon-Orr from At Large, and we have from staff support and then special advisors, we have Yaf Akahoots, Kim Davies, Bernard Turcotte, and myself. We have apologies from Ugo Akiri, who might make the call a little bit late, but she wasn't sure, so she's apologizing just in case she can't make it. Martin Boyle, Dejan Djukic, and Eberhard Lister might also join a little late, but he's apologizing he can't. And Bart Boswinkle and Christina are on holiday.
Okay, thank you. Any further apologies? Is there anyone on the call who wasn't mentioned? If not, we'll consider the list of present and apologies as being correct. Now, moving on to the draft meeting report from the 21 July meeting. That document is now up on Adobe Connect. And Bernie, do you want to step us quickly through it?
Yes, sir. Thank you. I think we've agreed at our last meeting that we wouldn't do a reading of meeting reports in detail. Basically captures what I got from it. And the only major change that I want to introduce is I've included the major elements and contributions from mailing list discussions on various topics. And I guess there's nothing else very exceptional about it. Back over to you, sir.
Thank you, Bernie. I assume everyone's had an opportunity to read this document. It's been in your hands for nearly a week. So is there any questions or any issues with the report? If not, we'll accept that as being the report from the meeting and the subsequent mail list discussion or significant points from the mailing list discussion. Okay. Moving ahead, the next item on our agenda is the terminology document. I had pointed out on the list that I'd, you know, we've been stuck on this document for quite some time now, and I was hopeful that we could get any final comments on the list, and there hasn't been anything posted. I'm not sure if everyone's 100% comfortable with the idea that we could get past the document. Does anyone have a particular interest in working through the amendments to the document in detail? Or would you be happy as a group to actually agree that this is the current version that should go out to consultation? Phil has his hand raised. Phil?
Yeah, I'd like a little more time to look at it. Can we give it a few more days?
I guess we could hold it. We'd probably have to hold it for another week. Do we have a call scheduled for next week?
Tentatively, so it's a question for this group to decide.
Yep.
Keith, Nigel.
Nigel, yes.
This is just something that I've spotted in passing. 4.4.4.1, that should be ROC 1591.
Oh, is that saying ROC 159 or something?
Yeah.
Yeah, I spotted that. Yeah, thanks. Did you get that, Bernie?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Very minor point, but, yeah, okay. So Bill's asking for a little bit more time. Is that generally agreed?
I have no objection.
No objection. Okay. Bill, you still have your hand up?
No. Let me get to that. Sorry.
Okay.
All set.
That's better. Okay. Well, could I urge people to have a really close study of the document over the next 24 hours at most, and make any points on the list in the interim, and let's try and resolve anything on this, so we could more or less take a final read of the document next week.
Keith, can I make one comment on something that I've just spotted? And I'm a little uncomfortable with this, and I'm not sure why. Can we look at Annex C, please?
Annex C.
Which is, in effectively, our glossary of terms. It's what we're looking for, how we're interpreting things.
It hasn't been updating, Nigel. There's a note to that. So that is definitely... does not match up with what's in the document. I can get that out to you in the next...
Oh, okay, fine. I mean, if I can just give a, should we say, an overview of where I'm coming from, rather than picking holes in individual definitions. It seems to me, again, what we need to do is to be very careful that we don't, by implication, adopt the IANA's view of the world simply by putting it in a definition. I mean, this is, for example, the one that I use an example is active admin contact. Well, that doesn't appear in any of the policies. Active admin contacts an ICANN construct. So if we're going to define something, we define admin contact.
And we have done that, and I think it's useful to understand if, I think as we went through it before, to have some qualifiers to understand what the status of those contacts are.
No, I don't disagree with that, or modifiers, but when they are given to the status of definitions as if you have to be an active manager or an active AC or TC, as if that's in the policy, I think that we're again in danger of mixing pure objective definition with inferred or implied policy, and I just highlight that as a red flag, without telling you how to fix it.
Okay, thanks, Nigel. Chris has his hand up.
I'm just curious, Nigel. Is there a point where it's defined as opposed to being in a qualifier? I may have missed it.
No, I read Annex C as a list of definitions. So the word glossary is used.
Right. And Bernie, Annex C needs to be brought up to date, does it?
That is correct.
So Annex C is simply supposed to reflect what's in the main body of the document?
It should.
Right.
It will in the next few hours.
Cool. Okay.
Yeah. It should appear as some bits where it doesn't. Sorry, that was Cheryl interrupting.
Thanks. Hi, Cheryl. Okay. Thank you.
And as Bernie said, there is a note to that effect.
That's what I thought. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. So that's not a major showstopper then, Nigel. It's just
No. It's just I'm trying to highlight that the IANA and ICANN have done mixing, should we say, operational and policy for too long, and I just like to see them separated to from a more objective approach. And it's just a little bit of a spin comment rather than a complaint about anything in particular that's in there.
Yes. Okay. So I think where we're at is it seems to me like there are more than one person wanting a little bit more time. So how about the idea of 24 hours review, get any comments of anything further on this, you know, over the next 24 hours or a little bit more, and let's discuss with a view to finalising this document next week, and then getting it out for the public consultation process in time for ICANN Senegal. And unless I hear an objection to that path, I think that's the path we'll take. Thank you. Okay, can we move here?
Just a comment, Mr. Chair?
Yes, Bernie.
Everyone, let's make sure we're all working from the same document. That would be version 3.7 at this point.
Ah.
And I will send out 3.8 later, a little later after the meeting, which will have the fixed-up glossary.
For some reason, the one I have is dated the 1st of August, and it says V3. Is that the one?
I believe, yeah, there was some mix-up in the file transfer, but I will resend 3.8 with the correct glossary in a few hours, and I'll probably make everything okay for everyone.
Okay, okay. Well, I'll try and get some off-list email comment to you when I get 3.8.
Okay, well, let's say if we get version 3.8 out over the next few hours, let's have 48 hours for people to raise points on the list, get them resolved, and then have a final document early in the week to finally adopt next week. Okay, I think everyone's sounding fairly happy with that, and I think we've actually done the detail several times over. So let's just have a final check through, please, everybody, and only raise issues of real significance. Okay, moving ahead, can we move on to the consent document? We've had quite a considerable debate about aspects of the consent document, and my apologies for getting it out so late and close to this meeting, but I think it is now a document that does reflect the various views put forward during the discussions on the list. And Bernie, I'll hand over to you to take us through this document. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. All right. So we're talking about consent 2.0 right now for everyone. Background and introduction is the standard stuff. Interpretation of consent, communication that the transfer is agreed by Anna's admission is highly variable, depending on a number of factors, including culture and immediate physical security of the CCTLD manager. This includes interpreting a failure to reply to Anna email as consent in certain cases of redelegation where the current manager has stated he does not support the request. The DRDWG report on redelegation of CCTLDs where the incumbent operator does not consent included the following note in its introduction. I think we spent a fair amount of time on this, so it's important to reread that. Consent means that the incumbent operator appeared to give their agreement by providing a formal and clearly positive reply to the requested change to the IANA database. The working group believes that the concepts of consent, voluntary, involuntary, and informed, need to be further explored and clarified during the development of a framework of interpretation. So that's what we're trying to do here. Moving along, applicability.
Sorry, Bernie. Nigel has his hand raised. Nigel.
Sorry, I didn't see that. Yes.
This is something perhaps I could have complained about at the time, but seeing as we're revisiting it, can you scroll back, please, Bernie? Stop. That's it. Consent means the incumbent operator appeared to give their agreement. We should have said consent means the incumbent operator did give their agreement, and apparent consent means they appeared to give their agreement.
Nigel, this is a direct quote from the final
document. I know it is. I said I should have said this at the time. When we revisit this, can we clearly distinguish between evidence consent and apparent consent?
We can revisit anything at the end of the document. But the point is, this is a quote from the DRD, and it's going to stay as is, I believe.
I'm not suggesting we change it. I've accepted that.
Okay, then.
You misunderstand my point. My point is that when we started talking about physical security of the CCTLD manager, the scenario of the guy with a gun to his head, I think the concept of apparent consent is worth exploring in our work. That's the point I'm making. I'm not trying to rewrite what we actually did write with hindsight.
To that point, as you know, we provide a straw man and everything's on the table, so we don't need to spend a lot of time with that here, I don't think.
And I'm not going to. I'm just flagging it.
Okay.
I do.
Can we proceed?
Yes, carry on.
Okay.
When I work out, I put my hand down.
Nigel, I'll take it for a given that your hand is always up, okay? Delegation. There were no issues raised by the DRDWG regarding consent and delegation. So there's nothing there. Redelegation, there were significant issues. We're not going to go through that. We all know that. Retirement, although there's no policy statement dealing with the retirement of CCTLDs, the recommendations of the FOI working group on this topic of consent for redelegation could also apply to the retirement. But that'll be for the policy development process, as we know. So that's beyond the remit of this group. Given for those that maybe have forgotten or don't remember, recommendations of the DRD working group were the creation of the FOI and a policy development process for the retirement of CCTLDs. And the FOI is only dealing with the FOI stuff, which does not include retirement. 1.4, related topics and issues. What we've got here, a definition of an act of administrative contact and procedures relating to the retirement of a CCTLD administrative contact. The topic of unconsented redelegations will be addressed in that topic. Revised definition of consent mechanisms for establishing and documenting consent could help address issues related to stealth redelegations. And definition of consent and mechanisms for establishing and documenting this could impact the required content of IANA reports. Anything on 1.4? I'll take that as a no. Section 2, the objectives. 2.1, analyze all past cases of redelegation versus consent and identify issues versus applicable policies and procedures. 2.2, based on the analysis of past cases, determine if the FOI working group is required to interpret applicable policies to address the issues. 2.3, if the FOI is required to interpret applicable policy with respect to consent, establish who can provide consent for a redelegation request, establish a definition of consent by the current manager of a CCTLD for the redelegation of a CCTLD to another manager, define mechanisms for establishing and documenting consent by the current manager. Any questions, comments on Section 2, the objectives? Hearing none, let's move on. Applicable policy and procedure statement. RFC 1591, relative to redelegation, there is only one, and it's quoted here, which is basically the administration of delegated domains, subsection 6, for any transfer of the designated manager trusteeship from one organization to another, the higher-level domain manager. The IANA, in the case of top-level domains, must receive communications from both the old organization and the new organization to assure the IANA that the transfer is mutually agreed and that the new organization understands its responsibilities. It's also very helpful for the IANA to receive communications from other parties that may be concerned or affected by the transfer. I'm not going to stop much here. GAC principles. The GAC principles 2005 do not deal with the concept of consent by the current operator.
Yep. Sorry, Vinny, Bill has his hand up. Bill.
Yeah, I just wanted to pause and make a comment on the 311. and beat my drum about concept of revoking administration as opposed to redelegating. A plain reading of this, and this is how I have always read it, is that this is an example of a standard technical redelegation where two parties agree that the management of a domain name will go from party A to party B. And I read this as the original authors of the RFC basically instantiating or putting in stone the requirement that if there are going to be a change from party A to party B, that both parties do have to step up and say, yes, we're going to do this, and that would be in the interest of maintaining stability on the Internet and not in the interest of some sort of taking away of management rights. I think RFC 1591 specifically talks about how management of a ccTLD could be changed without the approval of the existing manager, and that is specifically for misbehavior. But in the concept of redelegation in this section, and it's really not a redelegation, it's a transfer of management, it's my reading that this was to have been taken as an agreed transfer of management, not a transfer under fire, so to speak. That's just a comment I'm making about it, because I'll keep harping on this as we go through.
Thanks, Bill. Yeah, I think it's quite clearly where there's a consented redelegation. I have Nigel and then Chris.
I actually disagree to some extent with what Bill has just said. This phraseology out of RFC 1591 needs to be read in its historical context. RFC 1591, when you read it from start to finish with the correct historical context, you realize it is intended to apply recursively to all domain names. And by all domain names, what I mean is every single delegated domain within the tree from the root down to something like xyz.yyz.pqz.com. And it's both a standard for the entire DNS namespace and how to manage names in it, and also by virtue of exceptions that are stated, and there's one stated in this paragraph, an example of how to deal with top-level domain names. And clearly, the rights and responsibilities, more responsibilities and obligations than rights, the way RFC 1591 is written, but the rights and responsibilities of the top-level domain manager are clearly set out, because the TLDs are regarded to have the policy applied to it identically to the other domain names, but with also special case things, such as it's the IANA who they deal with rather than the domain name that's delegating to you. So we need to look at this in context, and it's very clear that what this says is you must receive communications from the old delegated manager to the new delegated manager. It's obligatory. The word must is used. It's not should. It's must.
Thanks, Nigel. Chris has his hand up, and then also, Chris says.
I had a couple of points. I think, Nigel, with all due respect, you've just drawn perhaps the longest bow I've ever heard anyone try and draw. Unless I misunderstood you, I think you just said that 1591 seeks to apply to every domain name ever issued, and I'm happy to debate it with you. Now's not the right time, but you lost me on that one. But what I was trying to comment on was Bill's point, because I wasn't actually quite clear why. Bill, why you were raising it seems to me to be abundantly clear that 311 in this document, which refers to section 3 of 1591, quite clearly states that for any transfer of the manager, there's got to be communication from the old and the new, that the shoreline of the transfer is mutually agreed. Why is that problem? I got the impression that was problematic for you, but surely that's what you want, isn't it, Bill? I'm unclear as to why you're raising a point about revocation here. I would have thought Section 3 says exactly what you would have wanted it to say. Or am I missing a point?
Okay, I've got a number of hands up, but since it's a direct question to Bill...
Keith, I didn't want to mess up.
It's no problem.
I just don't understand.
But taking the speaking order out of order, Bill, would you like to respond?
Just by way of explanation, my concern is that we're still going to have this sort of two-track train, one engine and two tracks. One of them is, there's the redelegation process, and someone can just step up and say, management of ZZ is... we don't like the way they're doing it, so you should redelegate to us. And then there's a negotiation process, and the two parties sit down, and Ayana tries to help, and so on and so forth. And at some point, there's the possibility of a challenge to change, as we've had in the past, where the manager hasn't agreed or whatever. And I guess what I'm saying is that it's my reading of this section that this is relating only to voluntary, agreed-upon changes in delegation, and that the only way a delegation could be changed involuntarily would be under RFC 1591 through the revocation process for misbehavior. And, in fact, it is in that case where you wouldn't get both parties to agree, because in a revocation... You have an objected, objected.
Bill, what you're trying to say is that it's not open for. And let's use a specific example. Are you suggesting that it's not open for the government of Australia to go to IANA and say that they do not like the way that OUTA is running.au? That they believe that it should be redelegated to the government itself or to another outer, and that basically IANA's response to that should be, we're not even going to talk to you until we've gone through a revocation process specifically set out in 1591, and unless we decide that OUTA is doing a bad job, doesn't matter what you say, we won't even enter into discussions with you.
I don't think the government of Australia has any reason to go to
it's just an example.
Because they could do whatever they need to do through statute. And then that would, of course, be an agreed-to change in delegation between, as happened in Japan, I believe, between the two consenting parties. I think if the government of Australia had a problem with the management of .au, they could also go to ICON and say, these people have been misbehaving, and under the terms of your policies, we believe it's adequate misbehavior that their ability to manage the authority to manage should be revoked, and here are the reasons, and present the reasons. I think we're talking about two different things. One is the government's sovereignty over its own businesses and citizens. Basically the citizens are the government. And the other is, for example, how you deal with an entity that has licensed you to operate McDonald's in Australia if that entity is in the U.S.
Okay, so I think we need to make some progress here, and Bernie has, an important point. So despite having a speaker's list... of several people. Bernie, do you want to give us...
Yes, points, Mr. Chair. The first one, we're not going to rewrite quotes from RFC 1591, and that's all we're doing here is listing the quotes. As I told Nigel, when we get into interpreting or defining things, let's bring up all the relevant comments, please. But if we're going to argue about what's actually written in RFC 1591, then we're not going to get through this. Second, I understand the sensitivities, but we're not doing unconsented readouts. The whole point of this consent paper is to understand what consent is for a transfer as defined under 3.1. And I really appreciate what you're saying, Bill. I understand it, but we need to get through this so that we're getting to exactly what you're talking about. So let's not try to have the whole discussion and, as Keith would say, eat the elephant in Section 3.1.1. We're simply saying what is there right now, and we're going to look at what's there right now versus what has been done in the past, see if there are issues. Well, we can understand that there will be, but let's do it properly so we can show the world that there are issues. If there are issues, then it's the mandate of the FOI working group to reinterpret the policy that's there, and then let's have those discussions that are relative. But I don't think anyone's trying to slip in unconsented readels here or anything else. We're just trying to understand how we should actually work with the redelegations that are done here. So please, people, let's do our work in a consistent fashion, because if we keep going back to trying to eat the whole elephant in one shot, we're just not going to get through this. Over to you, Mr. Chair.
Thanks, Bernie. Okay, I see Chris still has his hand up, but probably doesn't really mean that, or has failed to take it down. So I have Yart and Nigel with their hands up, but reiterating Bernie's comments that this is the document about consent, and therefore is confined to the concept of where there is consent between the or defining consent and how that appears to have been discussed. And this is the policy statement that from which consent, the concept of consent stems. Please, new points only. First, Yart.
Yes, I just want to make a warning, issue a warning about the fact that there's a lot of people are always confused about the status of RFCs, and it just happens to be that 1591 is not a standard at all. It's just an information document. It might be imported, but I mean it's not a standard, and therefore also it's confusing to call it a standard. Furthermore, the difference between a must and a should is well defined only in standard documents and follows yet another, IFC, describing the differences. I mean, using the difference for informational documents is probably not really proper.
I think that's a very valid point, Yap. It is, as we discovered on during our work on Delegation 3 Delegation Working Group, the thin piece of potential global public policy that has been moderately well accepted as being appropriate for the delegation and redelegation of CCTLD or of TLD. So I think we have to accept it, despite its informational status, as being the only firm attempt at some form of global acceptance. And, of course, that does raise its applicability in today's world, and I dare say if we find that there are major policy gaps in 1591 or its status itself is zero, then we may well find ourselves in a policy development process try and start the whole process from scratch. However, moving along, Nigel, and then we should try and move on. Nigel.
Thanks. I put my hand up when Chris was speaking because he mentioned something that I wanted to come back on. But before I do that, I'll work in reverse order and I'll just make a comment on what Yarp's just said. echoing what Bernie said, it's a bit late now to criticise the choice of words that John Postel used back in 1994. It does say must, and that does have a meaning. And if RFC 5091 has any effect whatsoever on regulating the relationship between the actors, we must interpret the word must in this place and not the word should. Going back to what Chris said, with a bit of surprise, and this actually is a good example of what I'm trying to get over. I don't mean to play the long in the tooth card. There are a lot more people who are a lot more long in the tooth than I am. But actually, Chris, that is exactly what RFC 1591 does. It does purport to apply to every single subdomain all the way down to the leaves in the tree. Leaves in the tree. And if you want the actual reference, it's on page... I've lost it now. I think it's page 3 of RFC 1591. Yes, it is. It's the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5th paragraph on page 3, which actually says, most of these same concerns are relevant when a subdomain is delegated. And in general, the principles that apply here apply recursively to all delegations of the Internet DNS namespace. So in other words, it applies equally to mtv.com as it does to com, and it applies equally to co.za as it does to za. I'm using that as an example, as even in today, that's now run by different people.
Okay. Thanks, Nigel. But yeah, I think getting back to the point, we're trying to get a definition around this, what consent in its various forms might mean. So I think can we move on with the document and come back to this if it remains an issue once we've worked our way through? I see no further hands up, assuming Nigel has just failed to take his down. So could we perhaps try moving on and come back to this at the end if it remains a problem? Thank you, Bernie.
Thank you, sir. For those who've lost track, 20 minutes ago we were at 3.2, GAC Principles 2005. The GAC principles don't deal with the concept of consent by the current operator, or at least I could not find it. And the final applicable document is Understanding the CCTLD Delegation and Redelegation Procedure from IANA, where basically, I'm not going to run through the details, but basically they're looking for confirmation for a redelegation from the AC and the TC. There's a note here. IANA has noted in its consultations with the FOI working group that the ICANN board can choose to approve a redelegation even if not all conditions are met. It's unclear under what circumstances IANA would present a redelegation request to the board that it did not believe should be approved. So that's section 3.4, and in summary,
just a moment, Bernie,
just like to section 3.5, and then we're I'll take any questions. So essentially, we're saying, from what's documented, we've got one policy, which is that RSC 1591 requires the approval of the incumbent as proposed organization or manager. And in the IANA procedures, we've got a confirmation from the AC and TC. Questions?
Nigel has his hand raised. Nigel.
Yeah, 3.5.1 and 3.5.2. 3.5.1 is entirely correct. 3.5.2, I know what you're trying to say, and I agree with you, but I take issue with the word interpretation. And the reason I take issue with the word interpretation is the title of the working group. It could very easily be confused that this is actually an interpretation of the policy. It's not an interpretation of the policy. It's an application of IANA's historical
internal
procedures.
I'll change interpretation.
Okay. I'll leave you to find something equally suitable.
Thank you. Any other questions on Section 3? Okay. Moving on, Section 4, analysis of IANA reports on redelegations. System of classification of consent. Given the documentation of consent by either the incumbent manager, AC or TC, varies greatly in the IANA reports on redelegations, it's necessary to define a system for the classification of consent from these parties to support a meaningful analysis. The classification system developed for this is based on the following definition. Just to add a little bit of background to this, there has been quite a lot of discussion between Nigel, Becky, and I on this. There was an original classification scheme that was proposed in version 1, the various version 1s of the document. Nigel brought up several good points. Becky contributed greatly to providing some basis for how things should be defined, and what we're going to present in section 4.1.1 as the detail is a little bit of the result of all of that input. So we've got five classifications. Documented, the IANA report includes some reference as to how the contact provided consent. When we say contact, it's a reference to either the manager, the AC, or the TC. Inferred-questionable, the exact term to be confirmed. There's still some discussion going on between Becky and Nigel, I think, on exactly what this should be called, but I think the category is generally agreed. Although there is no reporting of consent, there is some information in the IANA report which could imply consent of the contact. Not addressed means there is no mention of consent in the IANA report, either way, not for or against. Noted, IANA simply notes or states that the contact has approved consent, it should be without any additional documentation from the contact to support that statement. And finally, refused, the IANA report documents the contact refusing to consent to the redelegation. So those are our proposed definitions. Questions, comments?
There don't appear to be any, Bernie. Oh, Nigel just raised a hand. Nigel.
Just a comment. I've put something on the chat as a suggestion.
Okay, I think we'll continue to have some discussion as far as the exact text around 4112, but even as we keep wordsmithing 4112, I think the concept of what's behind that category doesn't change, so we can proceed anyways. Are there any other questions or comments?
Yes, Vicky has her hand raised. Vicky.
Yeah, I just wanted to confirm that I don't think that there's a substantive issue. We're just looking for a word. So I do think that we'll have some more discussion about it, but I don't think that the concept is really in play.
Oh, no, we're having lawyers discussing a word. May be long, folks, but
check in 2 years from now.
Yeah, we'll call it X for now, right? X marks.
Well, we're sparing you. We're having it offline.
Yes, that's right. Thank you very much. All right. Anything else in 4.1.1?
Doesn't appear so. Please continue, Benny.
Okay. 4.2, just stating that the analysis group we're looking at are the redelegations from 2000 to the end of January 2011, which provides us with 50 cases of IANA reports on redelegation. Any questions on 4.2? Not seeing any. So the first part, how we've attacked this, is we've looked at each redelegation request and classified the consent that's provided per contact. So this is not a classification of the whole request. But before we can do a classification of the whole request, we have to understand how each contact is documented in that report. And to a certain extent, that's just working data, but the information is interesting in that the manager has documented consent 22% of the time, inferred questionable 10% of the time, not addressed 24%, noted 40%, and refused 4%. The AC, 12, 6, 38, 44, and the TC you see out there. Once we've got that information, what do we do with it? Well, before we go there, are there any questions on how we've classified the consent from the contacts? Okay, hearing none, let's move on. 4.3.2, now that we've classified the consent from the various contacts, we need to figure out how we're going to classify the request as a whole. Now, I'm very sorry because this goes into extreme details, but hopefully provides a mechanism that if we can come to agreement on, we can show that we've been very serious and thorough about how we look at this for classifying this so that we don't ever have to go back to question if something was classified properly. We can simply work from the results that that will give us. So this is probably going to take the next few minutes and explain this to you properly, but that's the reality of the situation. So, 4.3.2, given the variety of responses documented by Anna and reports on redelegation, it's necessary to develop a classification scheme for requests versus contacts. This is what we're doing here. RFC 1591 essentially states that the incumbent manager must communicate its consent for the redelegation to IANA. In trying to work with the IANA procedures on redelegation, essentially state that the AC and TC have to communicate their consent for redelegation to IANA. So we've got two conditions, but the second condition has got two variables, so it makes things a little messy. In trying to work with both of these, it's necessary to order these. As such, it's proposed that RFC 1591 be overriding in all cases. What does that mean? Well, classification of consent by the manager. The manager consent is classified as documented. So in the chart up here, we've got manager 22%. So basically in that 22%, we're saying if the manager consent is documented, it implies that consent for the request should be classified as documented regardless of the classification of the AC and TC replies. So what we're saying here, and that means, just to be very clear, technical contact could have refused, but because we're saying RFC 1591 is overriding because it's the only policy statement, and therefore it makes sense, then the manager decision, if there is a clear decision, is overriding. So if the manager consent as a contact point has been classified as documented, then the request as a whole should also be classified as documented. Now, I've whipped this horse not quite to death, but I'm going to stop here for a sec and take questions before we go into the other details. Are there any questions? Okay, I don't see anything. We'll move on. Similarly, if the manager consent is classified as noted, then the request should be classified as noted. If in 43.253, manager consent is classified as refused, implies consent for the request should be classified as refused. So for those first three, documented, noted, and refused, we doesn't matter what the AC and TC have said, we will classify the request as that. Okay? Once we get to 43.254, manager consent is classified as inferred questionable. The request should be classified as the best of inferred questionable or the result of classification of consent by the AC and TC. So what we're saying here is given inferred questionable is sort of up in the air as to whether it is an approval or not as per the procedures. In this case, we'll take the best of the manager or the AC and TC. In 55, we've got manager consent is classified as not addressed, meaning there is nothing in the IANA report one way or another. The request in this case should be classified as the result of the classification of consent by the AC and TC. So we've gone through the five options for a manager. In the first three we described, i.e. the manager has documented consent, noted consent, or refused, we're taking what the manager has said to be the result of consent for that request.
Right.
If we've got inferred questionable, we're saying, well, we'll take the best of the manager or the AC and the TC. And in the case of there is no mention at all of what the manager has said relative to the redelegation, we will simply take the result of consent from the AC and TC. And exactly what that means, consent of the AC and TC, we'll go through next. Are there any questions on that section?
Yes, Nigel has his hand raised. Nigel.
Yes, there are. It's not so much a question. I think this is wrong. I'm going to call them 4 and 5 to save reading them out. 4 is kind of okay. If there is evidence in the description that the manager is kind of not objected, and then there's explicit confirmation from the AC and TC, then it's pretty clear the manager has consented. So I kind of think 4 is correct-ish. But I think 5 is wrong. And the reason I think 5 is wrong is this, is that if it says that there must be a communication from the manager and the manager simply has given no indication, it's simply not addressed the consent, then that condition has failed. So this should say consent is not present in the circumstance described in 5, in my opinion.
Would that mean that you would classify that simply as a redelegate? Sorry, as a non-consented
change?
I
was asking Nigel what the effect of his comment is in practical terms. But Nigel's been disconnected, so he can't answer that question conveniently.
Okay, we might come back to that when Nigel is reconnected. Carry on in the interim, Bernie.
Thank you, sir. So we've got an outstanding question on 43250. Oh.
Yeah, I'm back, sorry.
Okay.
Oh,
Chris, I'm sorry, I heard you start speaking and then I didn't get the question before I was dumped.
I don't have that much power, Nigel. I was asking you what the effect of what you're saying is.
I don't think the effect is that bad because
it's a non-consented thing. Yeah?
Well, I don't think the effect is that bad, but the thing is, it is it's a technical non-consent. Yes, we then look at the individual case and see what the implications are for the individual case, and it may not be tragic, but you have to work it through.
Okay. What effect do you think it has?
After reading all of this stuff, if we're analyzing past cases, IANA has clearly documented for years and years, the current version is the 2007, before that it was 2002, I believe, that it will take consent for redelegation from the AC or TC. And that was the point of the previous Section 3, listing what from a existing point of view for the current historical documentation we have, how we should look at it. Now, if for me, I understand Nigel's point of view, but I have two comments. The first one is, I don't think it's going to change the historical point of view. I mean, that has been what has been documented, and we're just looking if what has been documented as a procedure, regardless whether we argue if the procedure matches the policy, is. So in my mind, I just don't understand the point of arguing about this. It's almost as in arguing about quotes. It's not going to change.
Bernie, perhaps I can assist.
Please do.
Okay. The issue is that the group appear to be stating that consent was present. And quite clearly, according to what policy we have, consent, according to the statute, according to the policy, was not present. What you can say, if you wish to keep it as it is, and I think we can finesse this, but I think it needs to be stated explicitly, that the IANA has accepted this as consent, not that it is consent.
I think that might be fine if the rest of the group is fine with that, because that is what we're trying to say, as far as I'm concerned.
Fine. Then I think that clarifies things from both perspectives.
Okay, Vicky is in, right?
I just was going to say I agree.
Thank you, and no disagreement from...
Oh, joyous moment.
Yes, and I'm actually agreeing with lawyers, which is more worrying. So a little bit more work on the drafting there, I think, Bernie, and carry on.
Thank you, sir. That's noted. So I will just take my 43255. Thank you, Nigel and Becky, for that. All right. So the nasty, terrible work now is classifying consent by the AC and TC. Given the 43261, given the IANA procedures requires consent of both contacts, and that these are not always classified identically, it's necessary to develop a scheme to account for this to produce a unique result from both of those contacts. Given there are 5 categories and 2 contacts, there are 25 possibilities. So overall, it's proposed, given consent is required by both, that the result of the classification of consent of both contacts be the weakest result of either. So, just as an example, we've got a table of the 25 possibilities right below. I didn't put it in an annex because it wasn't that long, and it illustrates the point. Where my hand is, if you can see it on the Adobe Connect, we've got AC consent is noted, TC consent is inferred questionable, and we're saying the result of that, the weakest of those two, would be inferred questionable. Similarly, right below, we've got AC noted, TC not addressed, and the result would be not addressed. And in effect, why are we doing that? The telling example, when trying to derive a rule like this, is if the AC, let's say, best case scenario, provides documented consent for the redelegation, and the TC refuses, which is the worst case for the TC, the redelegation can't go forward because the procedure says you need both. So it would seem reasonable to use the weakest of the two, and I have discussed this with Becky, and she thought that that was reasonable too. Any questions on the scheme itself? Mathematics and statistics wasted. All right. So what we've done then is if we can classify the results of consent from the AC and TC in all 50 redelegations, and then we use the scheme where the manager consent is predominant, except in the case of inferred questionable, where we will take the best of either, and in the case where it's not addressed, we will take what the AC and TC have given, and all of that in great detail you will find in Annex A. So every single case, the classification of the consent of each contact, what the linking of that consent for the AC and TC gives, and then the end result for the full request. And I've saved you from that in the paper, but if you want it, Annex A, both by date and right below it, classified by CCTLD. So if you're looking for your very favorite redelegation request historically, you can easily find it. The results, I've included the table, gives the following. So we're still using the same five classifications for the request as a whole now. This is what we're going to use later on in the document to understand how things have been applied versus the rules. What does that give us? Documented. We've got nine clear cases, and we've got cases that end up being listed as documented, but we've got some questions about for a total of 11, or about 22% of the cases. Questionable, we've got five clear cases of that for 10%. Not addressed, we've got nine cases for 18%. Noted, we've got 21 clear cases and two cases where there are some question marks for 46%. And refused, we've got two clear cases for 4%. I'm going to go right into the analysis for a second here, unless there's a question.
There doesn't appear to be any questions at the moment. So.
Thank you. So, what does this tell us? Documented and noted represent 68% of redelegation cases where there are few issues with the consent for the request. Basically, in 68% of the cases, just a little bit over two-thirds, we're pretty clear that according to the rules we're playing with, it seems okay. Inferred questionable represents 10% of redelegation cases where IANA has failed to document the request meets either the requirements or consent. There is reference to other documentation, such as government decrees or private contracts, which infer the manager is consenting to the request. Given IANA has failed to demonstrate consent as per the requirements, these requests cannot be considered consented. What are we talking about clearly here as an example? There, I believe it's Barbados, where the IANA report on redelegation states that there is a contract between the government and the Island Cable and Wireless Company that when the government asks for a redelegation of the CCTLD to itself, cable and wireless will agree to the transfer. We're not given a copy of the agreement. There is no mention of the manager agreeing to the transfer and communicating that to IANA. And the AC and TC are not identified, and there's no mention that they have agreed to the transfer. So there is some information there. Is it enough? Don't know. We'd probably have to go into analyzing the case and making a decision. Is it worth it at this point? I don't think so, but that's up for the working group to decide. 443, not addressed, represents 18% of redelegation cases where the consent is not documented. Either way, given consent cannot be confirmed from either the manager or both the AC and TC, these requests cannot be considered consented. Refused represents 4%. I think that's fairly clear. Consolidating inferred questionable, not addressed, and refused as redelegation requests where IANA has failed to demonstrate consent for the request represents 32% of all cases, which matches up against the 68% where there were no issues. So we've got about a third. If you add in the four cases with the question marks, it's about 40%. If you simply consolidate, sorry, I skipped 4, 5, not addressed and refused, you've got about 22%. You've got 22% of cases. In almost any system, 22% represents a significant variation from the expected results. So our best case scenario for issues is 22%, and our worst case is probably 40%, and the reality probably lies somewhere in between there, and I think that sort of provides a very good picture against the existing rules and what we would expect to find in an IANA report according to this formal system we've developed for classifying this about where things lie. Are there any questions on 4.4?
There appear to be any questions.
Okay. So what does this give us? I think, as noted in the objectives, we now have to decide if the FOI, if there's a basis for the FOI interpreting policy relative to consent, given this information. I think, for me, I haven't spent a lot of time on this, the analysis of consent for redelegation requests clearly demonstrates that there is a significant variation from the expected outcome and that the FOI working group should interpret applicable policies for the redelegation of CCTLDs. I mean, just from a raw mathematical point of view on something that is as formal as a redelegation, and we've said this many times, starting in the DRDWG, there's probably very few things IANA does relative to CCTLDs that are as critical and sensitive as a redelegation. And for the variation to be somewhere between 22 and 40%, probably floating at around a third, is really significant and unexpected, so would provide a basis for us looking at this. I'll take questions on Section 5.
Nigel did have his hand up, but it's gone down. No other questions?
Okay. I would close Section 5. I would note it took us 2 months to get to Section 5 on the terminology document, so I'm all excited here. Before we get into Section 6, I will leave you for about 15 seconds and get a glass of water because my mouth is quite parched, and if we're going to get into Section 6, I have a feeling I'm going to need to talk some more. So back in 15 seconds, please excuse me.
No questions at this point.
We're back. So, the document is now proposing that there is a basis from the formal analysis of the documented cases of redelegation, the 50 that we're considering, for interpreting what consent means. So, what are we looking at? Well, there's really, as Nigel has stated earlier, only one policy statement, and it's Section 3, Subsection 6, and we've already read it, and we know what it means. And this was, I guess, part of the discussion we were having in Section 3 of the document, where Nigel has made the point that there is must, and Bill has made the point, if I may interpret Bill, that if you're going to redelegate, it's a consensual thing. I hope that's okay. I'm addressing that to Nigel and Bill, I guess. Not hearing anything, I'll say that I've done okay until pointed out otherwise. Note in 612 is probably important. As stated in the final report of the DRD working group, there can be no redelegation without the agreement of the incumbent manager. The FOI working group will investigate the options for a change of manager when the incumbent manager does not consent under the topic of unconsented redelegation. So, as discussed earlier in Section 3, we're not looking in this particular document or tranche of work from the FOI working group at unconsented redels. Okay? This is about how we're going to make sure that a redelegation is properly consented as per RFC 1591, Section 3.6. Are there any questions on 6.1?
There don't appear to be any questions, and I just noted Bill with a thumbs up along.
Thank you, Bill. All right, 6.2. Tried to break this down, hopefully, in a series of questions that would make sense in trying to determine what we're looking for in consent. In interpreting 3.6 and what it should mean. So our straw man for breaking this down is 3.6 in RFC 1591 says agreed. What does that mean? The status of an incumbent manager and his contacts making them eligible for consent. What is an incumbent manager being asked to agree to in a redelegation? It's fine if you can consent, but what are you consenting to? What is the proposed manager being asked to agree to in their redelegation? And I note that I've got that in a delegation, since we're supposed to be looking at both. So there is a proposed manager in a delegation. How should the incumbent manager in a redelegation communicate its agreement to IANA? It's fine if it consents, but how is it communicating that? How should the proposed manager in a redelegation communicate its agreement to IANA? Same question for a delegation. Who should be asked to approve the delegation and redelegation requests? So that's the proposal for slicing the elephant up so we can look at it, and I'll be glad to take questions and comments. You're scaring me.
Looks like everybody's in cohesive agreement, Bernie.
That's why you're scared.
Yeah, I'm really scared. 6.3, what is agreed? Definition of agreed. I've run through some of these with Becky to try and make sure that they make sense to in a general fashion. So definition of agreed from a log dictionary, the reference there. Agreed means settled and determined by mutual consent. Would then be logical to interpret the current manager as having agreed as having given consent. The definition of consent is to acquiesce, agree, approve, assert, to voluntary comply, yield, to give permission to some act or purpose. See also acquiescence. So we end up going to consent because, if you will, it's a little clearer. And it allows us to go into types of consent which we don't have under agreement. So that's why we're going to consent. Any thoughts on 631, 632? Okay, 633. As we go into the qualifiers of consent, probably the first one is express consent. Consent that is clear, definite, exact, and unmistaken. And the comment there is, this would seem to be a desirable attribute for redelegation. So, yes, express. Any questions or thoughts on that one? I don't. Does Nigel have his hand up?
Nigel's having problems at the moment. Can you hear me?
Yes.
I have problems with the Adobe right now.
Oh, sorry.
It's okay. Express consent, I'll make the point again that that appears to be required.
We'll go into a real definition at the end of this section, as you know, and please, I welcome all these types of comments.
Yeah, and just while we're here, Patricio just pointed out in the chat that in 6.3.3.1...
Yes, I've noticed the spelling mistake.
Yeah,
I will
cool.
Look that up.
Cheers.
6.3.31. Okay. Thank you, Patricio. The next one is implied consent. Consent that is not specifically expressed, but is inferred from one's conduct. And the comment there is, this would not seem to be a desirable attribute for redelegation. Thoughts or comments, questions on that one? Okay, seeing none, 635, informed consent. Consent given after being completely advised of the nature, benefits, costs, and risks of a suggested course of action. There appear to be two Nigels. My God.
he doesn't need his full title.
Ah, yes, okay.
Your garden.
Becky has a question just at this point, or has her hand raised.
Becky.
I'm sorry, I should have brought this up. I think that that we're overstating informed consent a little bit, and that makes me a little worried, only because IANA cannot be responsible for ensuring that the consent is given by a manager is informed. Informed would be the consequences are you will no longer be operating this CCTLD if you consent to it, and whatever else is attendant on it. It doesn't mean that you have to be informed about how this will affect your income or your standing in the community or anything else. So
I think what we're trying to do in the definition in 6.3.5.2 is take that larger meaning and say IANA can't be responsible for that, as in we see in many contracts where we see the phrase you need to consult proper legal advice to understand the impact on you or whatever else. I think what's important in there is, as stated in the document, that the text requesting consent should be clear as to what is being asked, and what the results of granting or not granting consent will be. And it should also advise the manager to seek legal advice prior to granting consent so that its consent is informed. I think that's the best we can do in this area, but definitely IANA and ICANN's responsibility when it goes looking for consent from an incumbent manager is to be clear as to what it's asking and to be clear as to the results either way.
So,
oh, sorry, Vicki.
I'm sorry. I'm just going to push on this a little bit because I do think that, you know, if IANA says you should seek legal advice and, you know, we're going to give somebody else the authority to operate this, then that's still informed. And the reason that this is important, and Nigel knows exactly where I am going on this, there is a sort of significant emerging, you know, use about consent being informed and unambiguous, voluntary, informed and unambiguous. And if we take this informed sort of out of play in this way, we may regret it.
Thanks, Vicki. I have Nigel Enville with their hands up. Firstly, Nigel Roberts II.
Well, I had actually put my hand up for something that's coming next. I didn't think this was going to provoke quite so much discussion. But I'll just say at this point then that I agree entirely with what Becky's just said and leave my hand up until we get to 636.
Okay. Thanks, Nigel. And Phil?
I just am not comfortable with that first sentence. ICANN cannot be responsible. I'm not sure this is a document where we should be saying what IANA and ICANN can or cannot be responsible for, and nor what purpose it serves. Maybe I'm missing something. I do agree with the following sentences or some variations thereof, but I'd feel comfortable if we deleted the leading sentence of 6352.
I also think the first sentence is a little bit strong. As in completely advised. I think it's just simply informed consent is you know what you're doing.
Okay, so what I would note is that 6352, we've got some editing to do, and I would propose to, we seem to have some success working between myself, Becky, and Nigel, and if the group is comfortable with that, we'll review 6352 with this subgroup to provide a text that is of comfort to everyone, Mr. Chair.
It sounds like a reasonable way forward. So noted the smaller group of Becky, Benny, and Nigel will work away on 6.3.5, both sections. Thank you. Carry on, Benny.
All right, 66, involuntary, performed against one's will. Nigel has his hand up.
Yeah, I think this definition is wrong.
Okay.
Involuntary is without volition. That's not against one's will. If I, if you walk along and you bang your knee and it jerks out in a reflex action, it's involuntary, but it's not exactly against your will because you haven't given any thought to it.
I'm just stating what I managed to dig up, so I will let the lawyers advise on where we should be on this. Becky, do you have a thought on this?
I think what we're... I understand where Nigel's going. I mean, I think what we care about is whether it's uncoerced.
Yeah, I mean, there are two types of involuntary action here. There's involuntary action that happens almost of its own accord without an opposing will, which is without volition, and there's involuntary action as a result of, for example, as Becky's just rightly said, coercion, which, of course, is a type of involuntary, but it's coerced.
Mr. Chair, might I propose that the same triumvirate work on 636?
That sounds like a very good idea. Thank you, Benny.
Okay, carrying on, 637, voluntary, acting or done without compulsion or persuasion, done without profit payment or any valuable consideration. It's obvious IANA should require voluntary consent. However, it is almost impossible to verify. What is probably more important and enforceable is that IANA be perfectly neutral in these cases and apply no compulsion or persuasion to the party that is being asked to approve the request. Nigel.
Same objection in reverse, although the meanings are much closer together. Voluntary means with volition. What you're looking for is uncoerced.
I would propose the same result in 6.
It sounds very appropriate.
Hey, if it works, keep pushing it, right? All right. So we've got a proposed definition now in 638, and I will assume everyone's hand will be up. Consent.
Can I put my hand up just to go back to the point you said, go to voluntary again? Would that be possible?
Yes, sir.
Are you suggesting, Bernie, that if I do accept a payment, it's not voluntary?
I'm not suggesting anything. I've copied down the definitions that I found.
Yeah. I mean, why does it matter if it's voluntary?
I think, as Nigel pointed out, and why we've agreed to look at 637 again, is voluntary as uncoerced, and that people are generally not happy with what's there. So we will be coming back with a new version of 637 because there are other people who have concerns.
All right. I'll leave it at that for now.
Chris, the reason I raised voluntary was more as a corollary to involuntary, so that the things are in step.
Yes, I understand that, Nigel, and I understand that the concern about the use of the word voluntary, my concern is that given the context that we're likely to be using these words in, and the way that we're likely to sew them into, you know, the next set of documents that we're doing, I'm concerned that we are careful that we, with our definitions, that it's not, you know, just because it happens to be in a dictionary as an explanation of what voluntary means or whatever word we end up using doesn't mean it's necessarily what we mean.
We don't want to make a rod for our own backs, and I can see your point.
A rod or any other tool.
We've got enough rods for our backs at the moment.
Okay, back to Bernie, thank you.
We've got a proposed definition here, which I have not updated since some other discussions have taken place. So I'll read this one, and then I'm giving you fair warning, Becky, I'll hand it over. Consent for a delegation or redelegation is required to be express consent. That is consent that is clear, definite, exact, and unmistaken, where IANA has not applied any compulsion or persuasion. And I think we've got a variation of that now and some reasons for that. So over to Becky.
Yeah, I've just put up on the chat what I think is a clear definition that sort of creates a pretty high standard, but creates some flexibility. So, and this is essentially what would be used to gauge consent in an international privacy setting. So, consent that is informed and freely given and unambiguous. And I know Al had added the express, the issue of whether it's express or not. And Nigel, I gather, is concurring with that. I mean, I think that's the question for the group, is how far we feel the rights, how far we need to go to express consent given 1591. And I think, and set out in a communication may be, that really ties us back to 1591, because that's what 1591 requires.
I'm comfortable with that, Becky, and I'm comfortable with it being set out in a communication. I'm uncomfortable about the possibility that, I guess it depends where we're heading with this. In the future, and that's why I'm raising little flags every now and then. If we're going to be faced with a barrage of claims later on that the only possible way of there ever being a redelegation is by consent, and consent has to be all of the following things, then we are backing ourselves into a corner. But if we're talking about what we would define as being voluntary, if that's the right word, whatever word we decide to use, then I'm comfortable with what you've just said.
Well, I think we're in dangerous concept of consensus here. So I think I'm not hearing any opposition to the wording proposed by Becky on the chat. So can we leave that for a bit of list discussion to finalise that wording? And Becky, would you like to take a lead on that on the list and
sure.
Cut and paste your comment and see if there's any strenuous objection? But it looks like we have some accord in that regard.
Yeah, and I'll try and address, Chris, the concern that you raised, which is quite reasonable.
Fine. Okay, we're coming towards the end of this call, and we have a little bit more document to get through if we can. Just reminding the group that we're not really here to be wordsmithing. Can we progress, Bernie, with some haste?
Yes, sir. Proceeding with haste. Status of an incumbent manager and his contacts, making them eligible for consent. This has come up a few times in the documentation. There are a number of IANA reports on redelegation which document the redelegation of CCTLD where the incumbent manager is derelict, has abandoned the CCTLD, or by its own admission is no longer involved in the management and operation of the CCTLD. This is significantly troubling given IRC 1591 requires the incumbent manager communicate his consent to IANA. It would seem intuitive that a manager or the ACNTC that it named that is no longer responsible for the administration and operation of its CCTLD cannot approve its redelegation. Questions or comments? Nigel.
Actually, this is. I'm surprised Bill hasn't got his hand up here. This is very clear the situation whereby a revocation must apply. Bill?
Again, guys, we're not talking about that right now. We're on the flip side of that argument. We're saying if the incumbent manager is derelict, has formally abandoned the CCTLD, then it cannot consent to the redelegation. This is what we're saying.
Then we agree, except I wouldn't put derelict in capitals.
No problem. We'll fix that. Thank you, Nigel. Okay, any other questions on 6.4? All right, since our chair has asked us to move with haste, What is an incumbent manager being asked to agree to in a redelegation? This is a straw man, so please feel free to comment or question it on the list. IANA requests approval for the change in manager from the incumbent to the proposed manager by the ICANN board and the USG. 2, hand over control of the CCTLD to the proposed manager as well as all the data required to ensure uninterrupted service to the current registrants in the CCTLD. Work with IANA and the proposed manager to ensure a smooth transition of registry operations from the incumbent to the proposed. Once all approvals have been obtained and the data transferred, IANA will update its database of TLDs to change the information for the CCTLD that has been redelegated to reflect the information of the proposed manager. 6.5, questions, thoughts, comments. Nigel.
I think lots of this is wrong, or rather, an incumbent manager is not asked to agree to anything in a redelegation. An incumbent manager asks IANA to do certain things. So the incumbent manager is asking the IANA to change the IANA database and maybe, but not necessarily, to change name servers.
Nigel, that's not true. The incumbent manager could simply say, I agree to the redelegation, do what you need to do.
Then the same thing still applies. It's asking for a change in the IANA database of top-level domain managers. This business of handing over control to the proposed manager is, by definition, what's going to happen, but it's not being asked to do that as part of the redelegation. That's out with RFC 1591. It's out with what the IANA does. The IANA does an administrative job.
The purpose of putting this in here, if I understand it correctly, is so that we're... Thank you. I always like to perform to a fanfare. The purpose of putting this in here, as I understand it, is to make a statement that says that this is what the manager is expected to do. Are you suggesting that the manager isn't expected to do this?
He's expected to do it, but not as part of the redelegation process. Taking a...
redelegation process?
Mm-hmm. They're agreeing to it being done.
Yeah. I mean, how can it not be part of the process?
It's part of what's expected to happen. It's not part of what the interaction is between the IANA and the incumbent manager.
It's not what the question is posing, though, Nigel.
It says, what is the incumbent manager being asked to agree to? This is the wrong way around. The incumbent manager is not asked to agree to anything. The incumbent manager has to make the request.
No, we don't. They can be a request can come from somewhere else. If the manager doesn't agree, then the manager doesn't agree. But it's not correct to say that the manager has to make the request. Anyone can make a request. Now, I had a main.
But this is implying that a request always comes from elsewhere. The way it's written, it needs to be more neutrally written.
Well, no, you see, it starts. Maybe I've misread it, but it seems to me it starts at 6.5.1 with IANA requests approval for the change in manager. So that means obviously there are some steps that have occurred before that, otherwise, unless IANA is acting on a frolic of its own, which is highly unlikely. So clearly there are some steps that have occurred before that. So what this clause indicates, contemplates, is a starting point of IANA requesting approval. What happened before?
Okay, I think I see what's going on here, Chris.
What's covered by this clause?
Now, I think I see what's going on, and I need Bernie to actually answer a question to see if I'm right. What you're actually trying to say, if I'm not mistaken, Bernie, is what is the nature of the consent that is being given by the incumbent manager? Is that what you're trying to say?
Correct.
Fine. Then the rest of it should not be written in terms of what happens, but it goes something like, what is the nature of the consent the incumbent manager is apparently giving? It's giving approval for the IANA database to be changed and the new name to be put in there, the new admin contact if applicable, the new technical contact if applicable, the new name servers if applicable. But the other stuff is implicit, perhaps, in the agreement, but it's nothing. It's not part of the redelegation process request. The request. The request is a simple, on the face of it at least, a simple request to change the administrative database and potentially also change the technical database.
Okay, thanks, Nigel. Bill has a comment to make.
Yeah, I'm sort of on the same tact as Nigel here, consistent with what I've said in the past. This would, in fact, most likely be a case where the manager is requesting the change in delegation, and not IANA requesting that the manager agree to a change in delegation. The only circumstance where IANA would itself be proposing a change in delegation without a proposal from the incumbent manager would be, as I said, the case of a revocation. And I think we need to craft this language in that context. Just an example, and I'm not saying we should use it, what I'm proposing, but 651 would be the manager is agreeing that IANA may request approval for the change in manager, for example, and not just state it as a fact that IANA will do it.
Okay.
This is what agreement is implying here to me.
This is far too complicated discussion to be having on the telephone, I think. I fundamentally disagree with that interpretation, but I think we need to take it up to the list. To discuss it, because we're not going to achieve anything by bandying words around on this telephone call, in my view.
Yeah. I think, in fact, the rest of the Section 6 depends on resolving this issue, and so we're not likely to get there tonight. I see Mark has his hand up. Could we take Mark's comment and then perhaps we need to close off and agree that this is as far as we'll go with this document tonight. Mark?
Yes, Keith, actually, it was exactly on that. I'm just seeing the time coming up, and you've got three more agenda items, and I'm just hoping you are going to touch on those. So, I don't know if Suzanne is still on the call, but... I'm not into wordsmithing and all this stuff. It's I haven't got anything to contribute to that, but I need to keep a sense of process and what else is going on in terms of discussion. So I'm particularly interested in hanging on for these last agenda items if we're going to cover them. But I think you just indicated you are.
Yep.
Thanks.
Okay. I think we need to draw a line under just before 6.5 on the document as where we finished tonight. I'd suggest that next call we pick up from 6.5 onwards, but in the interim some discussion on list on the points that we've raised tonight up to there and after there would be well worthwhile in order to try and progress finalising the document on our next call. So is everyone comfortable with that?
Yep.
Excellent. Moving back then to the agenda, we have the issue of the ad hoc working group discussion, and Becky, I think you're still wordsmithing.
Nigel, I sent you out my stab at sort of bringing that all our discussion together. So if you take a look at it, then we can finalize it.
Becky, when did you send that? Because I haven't, I've haven't seen it or I've overlooked it, which is the latter being more likely.
I'll resend it. I sent it a couple days ago, maybe yesterday. Maybe
I don't remember having seen anything. So let me just have a look and see if you've actually, I've actually overlooked it or something. Is this called 2 FOO priority assignments?
Yes.
Yeah, I've got it. I haven't read it. I just overlooked it.
Okay, if you take a look at those, I think then we'll be good to go on that.
Great.
Okay, fine. Thank you, Vicky and Nigel. So we'll see that for next week, hopefully. I think the meeting schedule's there, and it looks like we're going to need all the meetings in front of us. We had next week, 11th of August, as a spare meeting, but I think we definitely do need that, and we probably will need the 13th October meeting as well. Okay, under any other business, there's two items I have. One is the process for the public consultation on the terminology document. We do have that covered off in our work plan to a degree, but I think time, particularly since we didn't finish the terminology paper tonight, time is a little bit against us. So perhaps between now and next week's call, we might have to put some thought into how, you know, the opening and closing period for public consultation and how that might run through ICANN, Senegal, and how we might engage the fuller GAC in that public consultation. But are there any comments or issues around that process? And if not, can we think about the ICANN Senegal meeting? Traditionally, this working group meets on the Sunday afternoon and the Thursday during an ICANN meeting. I won't be attending Senegal at all, mainly because I don't have a period between now and Senegal where I can send my passport off to get a visa, because I'm not in the country for long enough. So I'll be attending via remote participation, but Becky is attending, so we'll be primarily chairing the sessions. To me, I think it probably is going to be quite useful to have both those working group sessions, and I think we also need to start thinking about scheduling any time that the GAC wants us for. Mark and Suzanne, if you can note that. And also, I'll start talking to CCNSO Council about time requirements for the CCNSO, particularly if we have our documents out for public consultation. I've got two speakers with their hands up. Firstly, Bill and Mark. But Bill.
I was off the call for a minute there. I didn't see where we concluded and what we were taking up next time.
Oh, we've drawn a line under 6 point after the end of 6.4 as being the part of the document that we have reviewed, and we'll come back to 6.5 and onwards for next week's call, plus all the amendments that we made earlier in the document, but with the suggestion that whatever discussion can occur on this to help finesse the document would be well worthwhile.
Okay, thank you.
So, Mark.
Yes, thanks. I will consult with Suzanne and Heather about Dakar. I just had a question. I don't know whether it's been covered off in other calls that I haven't been able to engage with or in other discussions. And that is with regard to community requests for revocation or redelegation. Is this working group going to look at what that means? What is the definition, or what is the eligibility of a community request? What is, I see in the terminology paper there's a reference to IANA documentation as to defining community, and then there is an explanation of what who would be interested parties. But is this group going to look at what constitutes a community request? I'm thinking of contentious situations where the incumbent is resisting a request. Is this group going to look at whether, for example, from a government perspective, the government has to be a party to such a request? Is this group at some stage going to look at that?
Correct. I think the identification of what constitutes significantly interested parties and aspects of that certainly are coming up, and they're not that far away on our agenda either. Yes, there's some gap, I think, between the policy statements of 1591 and the GAC principles in that regard that will require some careful discussion on the way through to that.
Right. I mean, it strikes me that that is in particular where GAC members are going to be particularly interested and want to get involved. I mean, the level of GAC involvement so far hasn't been great, because I don't think we're into the definitional work. But when it comes to processes, role of governments, the multi-stakeholder criteria, if you like, for something like this, in a request for a change, and in the context of IANA review and so on, that's where I think the level of interest of the GAC is going to rise. So notice of this topic, or where this these issues are going to crop up in your discussions, notice to the GAC would I think be very important.
Yes, we actually have some formal pieces of information to put in front of the GAC in coming up to Pinnacle, so Bernie and I are working on those at the moment.
Oh, that would be very useful. That's great.
Get more on that later.
Okay. Thanks.
If there's nothing else, anyone, I think we should draw the meeting to a conclusion. Just 1 or 2 minutes over time. My apologies for that. But thank you all for your participation, and please do engage on list and see if we can reduce the time on the call by resolving more things on list. But thank you all for your participation.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Benny.
Just a reminder to everyone on the terminology document, I'll be sending out a version 3.8 in the next few hours.
Excellent. Thanks, Benny. So ignore 3.7 and attack 3.8 with vigor, and let's see if we can get that finalized for next week. Okay, thank you all for your participation, and can you please change your diary from a spare meeting in case for the 11th of August to a firm meeting actually required for 11th of August at 2100 UTC. Thank you all, and good night, or good morning, or good afternoon, wherever you are.
Good night.
Thank you, Keith. Cheers.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Mr. Chair. Good, your timing.